I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, no full show this weekend since it's the international break, but we are coming to you now with a Tottenham segment, of course, featuring Steve Magookan. You can find on Twitter at Steve Magookan. He, of course, was formerly the chairman of New York Spurs, the New York City-based Tottenham supporters group. Steve, always a pleasure chatting with you, both personally and professionally. This time, a bit of the latter, though, as we talk about Tottenham. Over this international break, as you may recall, Poch was sacked at this international break last season, so it has been now a year of the Jose Mourinho era at Tottenham. At just first blush, what has been your impression of Jose Mourinho as the manager of Tottenham Hotspur?
Well, thanks again for having me on, Kevin. I'm actually in your time zone this week. I'm in Baltimore. Normally I live in Belfast, but obviously I'm here. So it's been a year since I've been on this side of the pond, and as you say, it's been pretty much exactly a year since Jose's appointment. And you know, when you and I have spoken before, it was obvious how much I love Poch and what he did for the team. We both agreed that I think he had taken us as far as it was going to go in that current set, in that setup. And then so when Mourinho came in a year ago, next week, I think it is, I mean, everybody knew he was a winner, and the timing of him coming in and the circumstances in which he did were open to debate and that sort of thing. But it turned out for the best. Who would have thought we'd end up being so optimistic just a year later about the direction of the team? I mean, even in the middle of the bizarre circumstances in which football's being played out at the moment. I mean, if you look at some of the things that he's achieved in the first year, I think the most fundamentally beneficial thing is that he has the team playing in a much more organized way, and he knows exactly what he's looking for in the personnel. He recognized some of the frailties very quickly and reorganized how we set up. I think, also for a fan, from a fan's perspective, having the Amazon documentary looking over his shoulder and getting an insight into his mindset was just amazing. And it was particularly revealing, actually, I thought about Christian Eriksen's exit and the way in which Mourinho's man management style works. There was a really good tactical analysis yesterday on the cartilage free captain side. I don't know if you saw it, about how Jose has changed Harry's role to become a deep lying playmaker. And I think that's been really crucial, especially in obviously in his link up play with Sonny, which has certainly paid dividends for both of them this season. But I think where we are at the moment is he's laying the groundwork. He's building a platform for success. And if you look at the signings, particularly Højbjerg and Reguilón, and in particular, I think the perfect pieces in a very Jose-type puzzle. And I think they're going to turn out to be foundational signings for us, the first part of that platform in what is a Mourinho work in progress. So all told, you know, I'm very ready for the next couple of years. I mean, his contract goes for another couple of years. So it's absolutely fascinating where he might be able to take us. And I mean, I'm sure you've seen the veiled sarcasm in his Instagram post, you know, which is totally justified, I think, by the way. You know, it sounds like Jose's next step will be to, you know, take a leaf out of Donald Trump's book and just refuse to accept any result that we don't like.
Yeah, I've very much appreciated Jose Mourinho's Instagram this year. It's been one of the few positives of this year on the whole. I definitely agree with a lot of what you said there, and especially with the organization aspect, because everybody expected Mourinho to come in and fix the defense and fix mm-hmm. the away record. The latter has definitely happened before the former there, but the defense is starting to show signs. And you mentioned Jose noticing in the team like the flaws and what he needed to fix. And for some of that, it was looking outside of the club. You mentioned Højbjerg there, really the perfect player to sit in front of that back line, even though he hadn't been a defensive midfielder very long. He basically only played that role the 1 year at Southampton. But obviously with his interception, his constantly standing in the lines to kind of just make players play their second best pass instead of the first one, I think really helps. And it also covers us defensively a lot. It's been a weird year. It is still weird that Jose Mourinho is the manager of Tottenham. But like you say, there's definitely a lot of optimism at the moment. Just for you emotionally, does it still feel like he used to be Chelsea's manager, or does he just feel like Tottenham's now?
No, we're still working that through. It's like, you know, when you watch our team, it's like going to the psychiatrist every week, and you're still working through your allegiances and also your sense of, well, you're waiting for him to screw up. You don't remember, but I do. When George Graham became the Spurs manager, and it really was a significant character shift for a lot of people. I mean, we couldn't even bring ourselves to chant his name. You know, we used to chant "Man in a Raincoat's Blue and White Army." but this is different. This feels. If he had come straight from Chelsea, if Chelsea had been his most previous club, I think it would be a different approach. I think the fact that his relationship with Man United went sour and that then he felt that he had something to prove, I think an awful lot of pressure has been taken off him as well, because I think the realization that he inherited a good group of players is tremendously genuine. And if the one thing that came out of that Amazon series that we were talking about, I think it's that. I think there's a real sense that this is a professional setup. It's not like he was being brought in to save a team. He was being brought in to take a group of players that really should have achieved more and take them to that next level. And the combination of just someone who has that winning record, someone who can walk into the dressing room and, you know, throw their medals on the table and say, this is why you should do what I say. That combination of that with the group of talented players that we knew we had under Poch, but really just couldn't move to that next level. And it's as simple, I think, as two or three personnel changes. And I don't want to sort of dump on Christian Eriksen too much, but I think the dynamic of having Eriksen in the team every week meant that Harry wasn't going to be playing that deep-lying role. And now that he has turned into the playmaker as well as the finisher, I think has been a huge advantage to both to him and to Sonny and to the rest of the team. So, you know, what looks like adversity at the start is really just the idea that you polish the players that are there, and then their true nature comes to the fore. And there really isn't a better coach to do that than Mourinho.
I'd agree. And I think that's a really interesting point. It actually, as you were saying, that reminded me of when Liverpool sold Coutinho and immediately were better instead of worse, because it allowed Firmino to kind of drift a bit more. And obviously he's a very well-rounded player. And I think we're seeing that a little bit with us as well, of when everybody talks about like the death of the number 10 or the death of the attacking midfielder, it's because forwards are capable of doing a lot more. And we're certainly seeing that from Kane at the moment. You keep referencing the Amazon show, obviously All or Nothing, the Tottenham Hotspur edition. It wound up being nothing. One of the things that we saw in that, as you mentioned, is the alienating of players, Eriksen and Dombele. Eriksen left, and Dombele has now come largely good. If his fitness gets up, I genuinely do not think the Premier League is really ready for a fully in-form and fully fit Tanguy and Dombele. The moments of brilliance are just incredible. But the latest person to draw that line of managerial style has been Dele Alli, who both of us in the preseason were like, this is the year he really shows up. especially once we signed all these huge players, you plug Dele Alli right behind Kane and maybe you have something. But as you're saying, that's kind of Kane's role now. What do you think about this kind of prodding style of management where he continues to kind of irritate his own players to see if he can get more out of them? And do you think there's a path back for Dele under Mourinho?
I hope so. I really hope so, because Dele has been one of my favorite players the last few seasons. But I think you're absolutely right to highlight that contrast between Christian Eriksen and Ndombele, because clearly I think Ndombele didn't feel part of the squad, didn't feel included. And that took a little while to work its way in. And I just wonder, you know, how much of that was down to Mourinho and how much of it was down to the other players, how much of it was down to the inclusion aspect within the squad itself. Obviously, and it goes back to what we were saying about Mourinho having the track record to be able to say, well, this is why I'm able to do what I'm doing, or able to take the tack that I am with you. Some players react to it in a positive way. Clearly, Ndombele has, and I think you're absolutely right. The league's not ready for seeing this sort of potential that this player has, and I'm glad they persevered with him. There's been an awful lot of negative speculation about Dele recently, especially with going alongside the speculation about where Poch might end up, and would Dele fit in better at Manchester United if Poch ended up there? That's all speculation. I think it is down to the player themselves, whether they want to knuckle down and actually, you know, try to improve or try to play more the sort of style that the manager wants. But again, it comes down to whether or not they're going to get the minutes to do that. And obviously, as you say, with bringing in expanding the squad in a way that we did in the last transfer window, it makes it harder to both to break through into the squad if you're not in the first 11, but also to hold on to your place. So yeah, it's a big challenge for Dele, and it really wouldn't surprise me if at the end of the season that there is a parting of the ways. But yeah, you know, this is Mourinho's style, and it's a winning style. So let's see how it plays out.
Yeah, and it should be noted that when Mourinho came in, Dele Alli looked like our key player.
Yes,
So that has happened within the last 12 months. I think it was last December or January when he did that overhead flick against Manchester United.
Yeah,
and he scored a goal. He still has that in him.
There's never been any doubt about what a skillful player he is. I mean, that's why Spurs fans get so frustrated when he's so inconsistent.
Yeah, for sure, because we know what he's capable of, and he doesn't do it often. But I think under Mourinho, we're seeing this, where Tottenham for years and years and years and years has been a club that has had a few mercurial talents and a whole bunch of other people doing their jobs. And sometimes it's enough, sometimes it's not enough, depending on what the objectives are. And I think under Mourinho, we've seen a phasing out of that, that consistency is more important than how you are at your best. That's why Dier is starting instead of Davinson Sanchez. It's right. Why Doherty is starting in the league over Serge Aurier. It's why Dele Alli isn't sniffing the pitch, but Ndombele and Lo Celso are alternatingly. Like the mercurial talent of when he's hot, he's a world beater, and when he's cold, you're playing with 10 men, just isn't how Jose Mourinho works. And I think we're seeing that at the moment with Tottenham, is that those players that burn so bright when they're hot but then cool off quickly are finding it very difficult to get a sustained run.
No, you're absolutely right. And I agree with everything you just said. And again, that you know, not wanting to dump on Christian Eriksen, but that's the profile that you just described.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm not pleased that things haven't gone well for him since he's left, but the fact that he can't get regular game time at Inter Milan really speaks to either his current skill level or his current effort level. I certainly wouldn't dare to guess which one of those, but it is one of those. Yeah. On the other end of the spectrum, you have Sonny, who has been absolutely brilliant, currently leads the league in goals, or is tied with it, with Calvert-Lewin and Salah, I think, if memory serves. Mourinho was asked about Sonny a few weeks ago, and he was asked by the press if he thought Sonny was world-class, and he said that was the media's job to decide. So we're very loosely media. Is Sonny world-class?
We had this conversation of earlier in the season, or towards the end of last season, and we weren't sure, I think, was the end result. He can be. I think he was, to a certain extent, a world-class player when he was playing in the Bundesliga, for example, because he was clearly head and shoulders above a lot of other players that were there. I think the interesting thing now is that we're seeing him in tandem with Harry, that you're not seeing him as an individual player, but he really does make the difference between when we're you can tell when he's playing and when he's not playing, and it's not just because of the impact that he has on Harry. It's because of the runs that he makes, the space that he eats up. There's still an issue with his tracking back, obviously, but I think that's still something that he can develop in his game, or that we need to make sure we compensate for in other areas of the field. But your definition of a world-class player is like the MVP in the American sports leagues. You know, do you give the MVP award to somebody whose contribution sort of pushed their team to a league victory or a championship or whatever, or do you give it to someone who clearly is the best performer regardless of how their team finishes? So you know, it's an objective, a thoroughly or subjective way of looking at how you describe a player. But he can have a world-beating combination or a world-beating contribution to how we line up as a team, and especially if Harry and Sonny are on their game, there's very few teams that can live with us going forward. The problem is the rest of the.
Yeah, I'd agree. And you are right. It is a fairly nebulous conversation. I assume that's why there's never been really a definitive answer.
I would just say the very fact, however, that we are so keen now to nail him down to a contract extension tells you that Jose at least knows that that's the bedrock on which he wants to build the team going forward, is that partnership between Harry and Sonny. We'll come on to talk a little bit about signings and the winter transfer window and whatever, but I think that's actually crucial to how we build for next season, for the rest of this season and for next season, is if we can just nail down that partnership and make sure that Sonny goes nowhere, really.
Yeah, and I'd agree, but I'd also say that's probably bad news for Dele, because the idea when Mourinho came in and what worked so well was it was Kane and Dele up front.
Yeah,
and now that it's become Kane and Son up front, this isn't a three-man show. So the fact that it is Kane and Son so reliably, I think, is bad news. But just to finish up the point of what is world class, I think there's a group of people that think world class means, are you in the world's best 11,
right?
Or does it just mean that you're at a very high level? Do you walk into any side in your league? If it's the last one, yes. Son walks into any 11 in the Premier League. Is he the best left winger in the world? Probably not.
Yeah.
So it really falls where the definitions lie, but there is not a team on this earth that would not rather have Sonny than not have him.
Not have him. Absolutely. Certainly not a team in the top half of the Premier League. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Next, we'll move on to the other side of that partnership, which is Harry Kane. You've already mentioned the fact that he's playing a bit deeper, sometimes very deep, considering he leads the team in like tackles and crosses tackles and clearances. A couple of goal-saving clearances already to his name this year. Not with his hands, which we saw in the Europa League. That didn't go as well. But heading him clear certainly seems to be on the docket this year. Obviously, as you know, I'm relatively recent to Tottenham. You a little bit less so, no offense. But I'm just wondering, for you, where would you put Harry Kane up against some of the legends of previous Spurs eras?
Right. Okay. Well, I don't feel qualified to judge him against players like Jimmy Greaves, who were before my time, although there are certain, you know, comparisons there that I think work. For me, I'll only judge them on the players that I've actually seen in the flesh. And I think Gary Lineker was probably the best natural, intuitive striker that I've ever seen in the flesh. But my favorite Spurs partnership of all time, strike partnership, was Teddy Sheringham and Jurgen Klinsmann. And they not just for the number of goals or the number of chances that they created, but the notion of the understanding and the just pure football intelligence that they showed. And you could see it also actually when Teddy played with Alan Shearer for England. There was, you know, it was a joy to watch. And I really do think Harry has at least played himself into that echelon. And the potential, as we were talking about his partnership with Sonny, the potential for developing that partnership still further, I think, is just tremendous. And again, that's to Mourinho's credit, whenever he's asked anything about the partnership between Harry and Sonny, he always gives credit to Poch for laying the groundwork for that. But I think in terms of the – I'm starting to see comparisons now between those two and Teddy and Jurgen and the way in which they played and way in which they created magic, which for me was just an absolute joy to watch. So I certainly Harry, in terms of the numbers, I mean, we know his numbers are only going to improve from here.
Yep, now 150 Premier League goals. Still not sure he'll catch Shearer, but we'll see.
Well, we'll see. But, you know, and obviously you bake in a certain amount of, you know, fatigue and injury into each season that he plays. But I do think in terms of the way in which he's thought of by the Spurs fans and the way in which they think of tactical players players who use their ability to the best of their capacity. I think Harry is certainly up in that sort of top echelon, well, along with Lineker, along with Sheringham, along with Klinsmann. So certainly for me, he's there, and the potential for developing even further is just tremendous.
You mentioned Sheringham there a few times. Obviously, we know that's why he wanted to wear the number 10. Was he wanted to honor Teddy Sheringham, and from what I hear, the play style is actually not that dissimilar. Do you see that in his game?
Oh, I totally do, especially this season when he's been dropping deeper, and you can see that he sees passes a lot quicker than a lot of other what you would call pure strikers. In a strange way, it's kind of weird because you're sort of thinking he's setting this pass up for himself if he was running onto it. You know what I mean?
And happens Sheringham, all the time where you're like, if only he was in the box after he passed it up front. Yeah,
absolutely. And Sheringham used to do that as well. And then when Sheringham finally linked up with Jurgen, it was like they had this mental telepathy that just they knew exactly where the other one was going to be. And it was really wonderful to watch.
Awesome. Well, I will need to find some old, I don't know, VHSs of Sheringham to look into it myself. But that's obviously very, very encouraging to hear and very cool, considering that's who he was trying to emulate by taking the 10 when the 9 was available that one year. Right. We mentioned that this isn't a three-man show up front for Tottenham, but Gareth Bale will certainly try his best to have something to say about that. Obviously, the biggest name that we brought in, although, like you mentioned, you could very easily argue that Højbjerg and Reguilón were much more important signings right. In positions of need, even though we admittedly said we weren't in the market for a left back. We had right. Davis, we had Sessegnon, we still, air quotes, have Rose, but just too good of an option to turn down. You bring in Højbjerg. Other names that were brought in, Matt Doherty, obviously bringing in Joe Rodon at center back, bringing in Carlos Vinicius, finally bringing in a backup striker. Add all of that clutch of players to Steven Bergwijn, who obviously we brought in January and scored that crucial goal against City last time. Obviously, City up next, which we'll get to later. But of all of these players that have recently joined, which one has stood out the most to you? And zooming out a bit, how surprised are you that we genuinely went in for 7 players?
Right. It's incredible. And you have to give credit to Daniel Levy for an amazing transfer window. That's why I think our business in the winter window will probably be quite muted. Partly because there aren't the players available that there would be in the close season. But also, I think you want to give Mourinho a chance to build the team based on that number of players, as you say, who came in. For me, the interesting signing and probably the key signing is Reguilón. only because I think we kept it so quiet when a lot of the other major Premier League teams were after him. You have to give credit to Bale, because I don't think Reguilón would have come to us if Bale hadn't come. So I think there is a sign, and also Joe Roden as well. I mean, that signing I don't think would have happened if it hadn't been for Bale and Ben Davies. Bale is crucial in terms of what he represents as much as what he gives us on the field. And those of us, you know, I know you remember watching him play before he left.
My first year was his breakout year. It was a good time.
Right. Absolutely. And I remember that, you know, the first time that he played with Eric Lamella, you know, the idea that he's playing with someone who was brought in to replace him.
Wearing his number, yeah.
Right, yeah, the last player left, the last player standing from the big splurge of the Bale money. I love Bale, and I'm hopeful that he can get back to full match fitness. And it sounded like he had a good game for Wales against Ireland the other night, and I think he's playing again on Wednesday against Finland, or he's due to play. Although he did sit out the game, the friendly against the US, and all of that it's good preparation for him as he tries to get back to full match fitness. And also, I think it was good to hear the Welsh FA and their manager, whose name escapes me just for the moment, having such high praise for Mourinho's work with Bale so far. And the understanding, I think, that it's in both their interests that they get a fully fit Gareth Bale back. I think his development is totally on track for what you would expect for somebody who hasn't played for such a long time. And I think, again, Mourinho is probably the perfect manager to work with in such a sort of rehab situation as we're seeing with Bale. I watched the England Belgium game this week, because the Northern Ireland game wasn't available on ESPN, the Austria game, and I watched the England Belgium game, and it was interesting watching Harry laboring away and just not being able to get any traction and with any of the players who came on around him, Calvert-Lewin or, you know, any of the players who were playing alongside of him. He just didn't seem to click with any of them. He was even being forced to drop even deeper, whereas, you know, Toby and the late lamented Jan Vertonghen were generally excellent at the back for Belgium. And I thought Jan looked very, very comfortable indeed, as in contrast to Eric Dier and the opposing back four. So, you know, as much as I love to see the, and you know how I feel about the international breaks. I hate international breaks anyway. But the idea of having international friendlies during a pandemic just seems to be completely insane. I mean, it used to be you would worry about your players coming back injured. Now you worry about them, you know, coming back infected. I mean, there basically shouldn't be any circumstances on which, for a non-competitive game, players are required to come out of what are pretty efficiently functioning Premier League team bubbles. That just doesn't seem to make any sense at all to me. And now, you know, we're seeing this with Matt Doherty, and the fact that, you know, Sonny is now quarantining because a couple of his teammates have tested positive. So, you know, there are ongoing issues, I think, for every Premier League team in dealing with each international break. And I think they might have to rethink the logistics of how these are conducted next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Agreed. Out of all of those players, who do you think has stood out the most as the best signing from the summer?
Oh, the best signing? Well, for me, it's, well, I think Højbjerg and Reguilón for different reasons. Højbjerg because I think you knew what he was capable of and you knew exactly the sort of player that he was going to be for us. And again, the timing of him coming in at the time when Vertonghen left, I think was particularly fortuitous for us. But for me, Reguilón he's going to be a player for the future. Absolutely, he's going to be a star for us. And I'm so glad that he chose us over. I know Man United were interested in him, and I know other teams were sniffing around. So I'm really, really happy that he ended up with us.
Agreed. And hopefully he feels very happy because he could be bought out either of the next two summers by Real Madrid.
Yes.
But let's hope that is not what happens because he certainly looks incredible in it. I tweeted out, I forget which game it was during, and I was just like, he's going to be a top three left back by the end of the year. Totally. In the Premier League. He's just so, so good going both directions. And you mentioned Højbjerg there. He commands the midfield in a way I genuinely don't know if I've seen. And we've had plenty of good defensive midfielders that brought different things to the table, where we had Sandro, who was obviously just like physically super gifted, mm-hmm. Scott Parker, who just read everything in front of him, Wanyama, who just destroyed everyone at any opportunity. But all of them, none of them were the leaders in that midfield. Right. I guess Modric was with both Sandro and Parker.
I was just going to mention Modric because in a way, one of the things that Modric never got a lot of credit for was just how much he would niggle at players to break up play. And
cut into passing lanes and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And he would just make himself a nuisance and just not let opposing players settle on the ball. And I think that's something very much that Højbjerg has a talent for.
Yeah, and the fact that he's also the one breaking up play makes it all the more interesting. And you can see him constantly encouraging all of his teammates or shouting or directing play. And it's one of those things that I wish I was able to see live, because obviously when you're watching on TV, they kind of cut around the midfield, so you don't get to just like track him the whole time, because obviously when it gets into the attacking third, the camera's going to swing where the ball is. But I'd imagine he will be even more impressive in person if I'm ever able to get back over there post-COVID.
And of course, they can only benefit, both of those players can only benefit from playing under somebody like Mourinho. Mm. And that's, I think, where I think Mourinho's vision for the type of team that he wants to build, I think, is absolutely on display there.
Yeah, definitely agree. It's an exciting time for sure with all of these new signings. Maybe less exciting for other sides. Obviously, Liverpool's defense dealing with loads of injuries. Manchester City as well, with Nathan Ake picking up an injury for the Dutch national team. Mo Salah testing positive for COVID. Obviously, us with Doherty as well. But with some other clubs struggling, obviously Manchester United doing one win, two losses seems to be their current pattern. With other clubs not really finding their feet yet, obviously with us very high in the table at the moment, have you ever stopped to think if you think we're genuinely in a title race, or would you just settle for kind of that top four area?
Well, the last few seasons, I think we've been forced to settle for things that our ambition outstripped. Let's put it that way. But I got to tell you, I think this is shaping up to be a real Andy Warhol season so far, where everybody gets to be top for 15 minutes, and really the top four looks to be more wide open than any other recent season, and that's obviously why it's so important that we make sure that we pick up as many points as we can against teams in the lower half of the table. And that's, something, as that can very often be our Achilles heel. We'll come on to talk about the Man City game in a moment, but the idea that we can raise our game, and we've got this stretch of games, Man City, Chelsea, and then Arsenal coming up, with a crowded fixture list with the Europa League and that sort of thing. But I think we always can raise our game against the bigger teams, especially, I think, with Mourinho's tactical vision as well. But I think our Achilles heel continues to be playing against the lower teams, when really in a league at the moment where any team can beat any other team. So I don't think there's any game that you can take for granted, and that's what still worries me a little bit about some of the performances that have been. There's been a lack of consistency, and that's I think what might just hold us back from a genuine from a genuine title challenge this year. But next year, who knows? I mean, I would be let's put it this way: I'd be disappointed if we missed out on the top four this season. Given the way we've started and the determination that we've showed so far. So again, it's like every season, what would you settle for? Would you settle for a cup and fifth, or, you know, would you settle for finishing above Arsenal?
Don't think that'll be an issue.
This is the thing. I wouldn't rule any team out at this stage. I think the top four could be any four from eight, I think, at the moment, quite frankly, and not necessarily just the eight you would think. So I would be disappointed if we didn't finish top four, Kevin, this season. But who knows? Yeah. And of course, you know, we've got the with Jose's track record in the Europa League, we're obviously going to be serious about contesting in that. And now with the route into the Champions League through that. Who knows? So that's it makes for a more, let's put it this way, a more interesting season than I think it might otherwise have been had it been dominated by other clubs. So I think we're definitely in the mix, but I wouldn't really credibly expect us to be serious challengers this year.
Okay, and then that's obviously not this easy at all, but trophy this year or no? Just gut feeling.
Gut feeling. I have a gut feeling about the Europa League. I really do. Only because Jose knows what he's doing.
Gotcha. Obviously, the most difficult of all of them with how far away it is. But yeah, I Saifu and I've had some very long conversations about which trophy would be the best to win, because that's how optimistic we are these days. And that, you know, if we won something like the Europa League, or if we won the title, the Mourinho era might end up being pretty short, just because it would have been like we did the thing. But if it was like the League Cup, it might cause us to push on. But certainly wouldn't be greedy. If it's medal and Hugo Lloris lifts it, I will be more than happy this season, to be sure.
Fine for me. But yeah. I am serious when I say I'd be disappointed if we didn't finish top four this year.
Yeah, agreed. There are certain trophies that would get me over it, but yes, I agree. I think we definitely should be a top four team, not just with the talent of our first 11, which Tottenham have often had, but the fact that we finally have the depth to back it up at a lot of key positions, despite how they performed in Belgium just a few weeks ago. If we are to challenge for the title, which it sounds like you're not as thinking that we will be, but even if we're supposed to make the top four, we'll have to do it the hard way, especially over the next few weeks if we want to stay in that hunt. For those that don't know, Tottenham's upcoming schedule: City at home, Chelsea away, Arsenal home, Palace away, Liverpool away, Leicester home, Wolves away. That takes us through Boxing Day. So that's seven matches, five of them incredibly difficult, two to three of them being a little bit on the easier side, in air quotes, because as you mentioned, it is Tottenham and we're capable of losing or drawing to anyone, especially with VAR and apparently Manuel Lanzini. Over those seven-ish matches, where do you think we'll wind up with the points from those matches, and where do you think we'll be in the table come the day after Boxing Day?
Right. Also, don't forget there are a couple of Europa League games.
Of course. And I think one Carabao Cup as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes, the Stoke game, I think, is just before Christmas. That's going to be an interesting one. The Man City game and the Chelsea game, I think, are the ones that are going to give the best indication to how serious we are about contending. As I say, I think there's going to be more than three teams that can actually contend this year. But I think those two results are going to be crucial. I'm very happy that the City game's at home. I am less happy that that we have to go to Stamford Bridge, but I think it's going to be those two games, I think, and the, I'm glad that they're sort of back to back, because they then sort of set us up for a run of games that shouldn't be, apart from the Liverpool game, shouldn't be as challenging as those two back to back. So I think it's those two. The North London Derby, I think this year is going to be a different mindset. I think a different way of thinking about. We're usually, when we go into the North London Derby, we're usually happy to take a draw from the start, just for the sake of getting out with our reputation intact. But I think that's slightly different this year. I think there is an expectation that we should actually win that this year. Palace could be a tricky game, because they've shown themselves to be very determined, especially at home.
And Eze Zaha partnership is really starting to click.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, they're starting to put it together. So, Leicester and Wolves are one of those two games that could always end up being tricky, especially going away to Wolves. I wouldn't underestimate them in any way, shape, or form. But I think the City game and the Chelsea game back to back, and then the Liverpool game where we have to go to Anfield, which has never always been a source of great confidence for us going there. Those three games, if we can get something from the three of those, I think we'll be okay over that stretch. But then I think all that does is just point up exactly what I was saying in a previous answer, Kev, about how important it is to make sure that we do the business in the games that we are supposed to win. And those are the ones that worry me in terms of being a potential Achilles heel.
Yeah, and so unfortunately, we've already fallen short of that with, obviously, the Newcastle and West Ham results.
Exactly. And that I think, should have been a wake-up call. That should have been the sense that, you know, hey, whatever we do, in the games against the top four, or, you know, perceived top four, that we can't take our eye off the ball and take anything for granted against teams in the lower half. So, yeah, I think that the combination of the City game and the Chelsea game, I think, is absolutely key. I think the rest of the games in that run up to Christmas are probably manageable for us.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because if you're aiming at the title, I think you have to win at least five of those, maybe six. If you're aiming for top four, you can get away with a little bit more. I currently, as a loose prediction, have us winning 13 of those 21 available points. Not really picking fixture by fixture, because, you know, the further away you get, the harder it becomes to do. If you can even do it the next match, which mixed results there as well. But
yeah, I just think if we're in the top four by Christmas, and that
which is before that Wolves match, just for people at home.
Yeah, exactly. If we, that stretch of games is probably our toughest stretch of games for the rest of the season. I think if we're in the top four by Christmas, then I think that's definitely a real platform to build on. And, you know, if we can, I fancy us to win against Man City this coming
did it
weekend
last time,
to be honest. I'm not going to actually just put a points total on it, but I just think if we're third or fourth by Christmas, then we're really in a very strong position.
Yeah, and it should be noted that while you were not as thrilled about the fact that we're going to be at Stamford Bridge and Anfield, that means we don't have to do it in the second half of the season. So if we even get a draw out of those two matches, we'd be in a much better place. And I do think the interesting thing about this run is, I had a friend ask me which I'd prefer, a win against Chelsea or a win against Arsenal in this stretch, because in theory, Chelsea will finish closer to us than Arsenal. There are like big top four challenger, depending on whether or not United recover. But obviously, Arsenal is still Arsenal. So that's a tough emotional one. I'm not sure I could answer that on air. But that's an interesting conundrum for Spurs fans. If you could snap your fingers and win one, which would you pick?
Well, Chelsea, I agree with you for the reason that, absolutely the reason that you give. And I would rather win one and lose one than draw both of them.
Yeah, well, yes, that would certainly be more ideal.
Not just from the point of view of the points, but obviously, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head with the fact that Chelsea are going to be finished closer to us than Arsenal will.
Yeah, and if any Arsenal fans are listening, sorry, but also why are you listening to a Tottenham update? So it's a little bit of both of those things.
Well, they're preoccupied with us. They're obsessed with us. So.
Well, that's true. If their attentions have faded from the Gunnersaurus controversy, they will be listening to this now. All right, well, we'll kind of wrap up by talking about the first of those matches. You've already mentioned you're kind of confident against City. They are who we have up next. We will be without Matt Doherty, who has tested positive for COVID. There are question marks hanging over Sonny because he has been close contact with people that have had it. So there's thoughts that he may have to do quarantine when he gets back to England. Although I don't think I can remember any high profile player coming from a country that isn't part of the, I forget the term, but I don't remember anyone missing out because of that rule. So we'll see how that goes, but there is a possibility that Sonny will have to quarantine and won't be available for either the City or Chelsea matches, which would obviously be a massive blow. But just starting with that City one, with all those squad potentialities, talk us through a little bit more specifically about what you're expecting in the City match.
Well, actually, I don't have a problem necessarily. Well, a problem with Aurier coming in for Doherty. I mean, Jose knows... Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think also he's trying, he knows that he's the number two now. So he's kind of trying to, you know, work his way back into the first choice team. So Doherty's absence, I think it would be perhaps more keenly felt against Chelsea if he's still out for that, which I hope he won't be. I think he's missing the Republic's next game, isn't he? And then then the City game.
Yeah, didn't travel with them.
Yeah. So yes, Aurier coming in for him. Yeah, I'm not necessarily have a problem with that. Sonny obviously is a different kettle of fish, and if he is quarantining the way you described, then that has severe implications, I think, for us. But you know, you just have to hope that Lucas Moura can step up and do a job in his absence. And at least the good thing is we'll have enough notice that we can practice around not having Sonny. So I suppose that's the upside, if there is
if
an
it
upside.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. At least we'll know about it a little bit in advance. It's not like he's missing through injury or anything. So, yeah, that's going to be a real challenge for us. And but I'm still pretty optimistic that we can get a result at City, certainly.
Yeah, and then obviously, as we mentioned before, City dealing with a lot of issues currently. No Otamendi, no Mendy, no Nathan Ake. Cancelo has been turning it on a bit. They might play him at left back with Walker at right, which has kind of been what they're doing. A question mark on Sterling after the England duty. He obviously withdrew from the squad today. Probably no Aguero. This is not a fully fit Manchester side, and they aren't at their best. And even when they've been at their best this season, they haven't been all that impressive. The scoring of goals has proven an issue for them, as I knock on wood, because that absolutely seems like a thing that would flip on a dime against us. All of a sudden, the goals would start flowing. But,
I mentioned I watched the England-Belgium game midweek or the other night, and both Kyle Walker and De Bruyne looked a little bit out of sorts. It has to be said. So.
Yeah, they just aren't at their best right now, although leave it up to that kind of situation for Tottenham to fall short against, you know, one of the weaker City sides we've seen in the past few years. But but yes, I'd agree with you. I think it's okay to be fairly optimistic about that one. And if we win City and one of Chelsea and Arsenal, I think, we'd be in very good standing indeed. Any final thoughts as we head towards the exit door here?
I can't really go without mentioning the sad passing of Ray Clements this week. Another in a long line of just brilliant Spurs goalkeepers. So just many condolences to his family, including his son, of course, former Spurs player Stephen Clements.
Yeah, obviously very sad to hear of his passing. Obviously less familiar with him as others, but definitely have seen the outpouring of emotion and affection for his family while they struggle through this. So yeah, very kind of you to say that. If you'd like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Well, you can get me on Twitter at Steve McGugan, all one word. And if you want to check out my non-football writing, you can get me at northernslant.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on. It's, of course, always a pleasure to chat with you about Tottenham or really anything in general, but we stayed on topic for the most part this time.
For the most part. Thanks again, Kevin. I really appreciate it. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.